Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, an independent report into the murder of Saudi reporter Jamal Khashoggi says there is credible evidence of possible involvement by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The United Nations report said the evidence supports the need for a continued investigation. It also suggested that sanctions be ordered on the prince's personal finances and property. The report is likely to harden opinion against the crown prince among many Western governments. Critics say an operation of this size would have required the prince's knowledge. The 33-year-old Saudi prince denies any involvement in the killing. He continues to have the support of his father, King Salman. Saudi Arabia has blamed Saudi agents for independently killing the reporter. UN human rights expert Agnes Callamard wrote the report. It said that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is responsible for Khashoggi's killing.
Khashoggi criticized the crown prince. He is believed to have been killed and cut up into pieces inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul by Saudi agents. His remains have not been found. Before his death, he had been living in the United States near Washington, D.C. He wrote for the Washington Post and other news media. He left Saudi Arabia after a campaign against activists and critics of its rulers. Calamard's report also says there is credible evidence pointing to the crime scenes having been thoroughly, even forensically, cleaned. This, the report says, suggests that Saudi Arabia's own investigation was not carried out honestly. There is no reason why sanctions should not be applied against the crown prince and his personal assets, the report says. It notes that, in the past, sanctions have been ordered even before findings of guilt have been established.
The report also offers a minute-by-minute account of the events surrounding the killing based on audio recordings provided by Turkish officials. It notes the sounds of an electric tool were heard. The tool could have been used to cut up Khashoggi's body. It noted the extreme sensitivity of considering the criminal responsibility of the crown prince and his former advisor, Saud al-Qahtani. Neither man has been charged. No conclusion is made as to guilt, Calamard wrote of the two men. The search for justice and accountability is not singularly dependent on finding a smoking gun or the person holding it. She wrote that her examination was mainly to identify those who may have failed in or abused their positions of power. The report also identified by name 15 suspects, of which 11 are on trial in Saudi Arabia. Five of those on trial may face execution under Saudi law. Saudi Arabia has not released the names of those on trial and has kept trial activities mostly secret.
The world's oceans will likely lose about 1/6 of their fish and other creatures within 100 years if climate change continues on its current path. These are the findings of a wide-reaching, computer-based study by an international team of marine biologists. Every degree Celsius that the world's oceans warm, their biomass, or the total weight of all the marine animal life, is expected to drop 5%, the study also found. The study predicts that if there is no change in the rate of worldwide greenhouse gas production, there will be a 17% loss of biomass by the year 2100. But if the world reduces carbon pollution, biomass losses could be limited to only about 5%. William Chung is a marine ecologist at the University of British Columbia in Canada. He co-wrote the study and told the Associated Press, "There are already changes that have been observed." Warming temperatures are the biggest issue, Chung said. But climate change also produces oceans that are more acidic and have less oxygen. This also harms sea life. Much of the world depends on the oceans for food or work, the scientists say. University of Victoria biology professor Julia Baum was not part of the study, but she said the findings make sense. She noted that the possible effects of the predicted losses of animal life are huge. Climate change has the potential to cause serious new conflicts over ocean resource use and food security as the human population continues to grow, said Baum. Marine biologist Boris Worm, who helped run the study, added that the building blocks of marine life, plankton and bacteria, may decline less heavily. That is the good news, he said. The bad news? Those marine animals that we use directly and care about most deeply are predicted to suffer the most, said Worm. He works at Canada's Dalhousie University. Scientists had already believed climate change would likely reduce future ocean life. But past computer-based studies looked at only part of the picture or used only one model. The latest study used 6 different computer models to give the best picture yet, William Chung said. University of Georgia marine biologist Samantha Joy was not part of the research. But she praised the study as well-researched and extremely detailed, and called it an urgent call for action. Healthy oceans are required for planetary stability, Joy said. I'm Pete Musto.
Facebook has announced the launch of its own digital currency in a major new push into the worldwide financial services industry. The new currency will be a cryptocurrency similar to Bitcoin. A cryptocurrency is a kind of money that does not exist in the form of bills or coins. Governments and banks do not oversee the money. Instead, it is exchanged digitally between buyers and sellers using secret codes for security. A network of computers records cryptocurrency activity between users. The activity is included in a ledger or list known as the blockchain. The blockchain permits the activity records to be checked and stored securely. People keep their cryptocurrency in digital wallets that operate in a way similar to online banks. Facebook is calling its cryptocurrency Libra. It expects to launch the service publicly in the first half of next year. The U.S.-based social media service says Libra will be available to anyone with a smartphone and internet connection. Moving money around the world should be as easy and cheap as sending a text message, Facebook says on its website. No matter where you live, what you do, or how much you earn. The company says it especially wants to reach an estimated 1.7 billion unbanked people across the world who currently do not use a bank. Costs to use Libra will be lower than what other companies currently charge for the service, Facebook said. It has not yet released pricing information, however. Facebook says its digital currency will differ in several ways from Bitcoin and other popular cryptocurrencies in use today. Unlike the others, the company says, Libra's value will be tied to real money backed by banks and government securities in major currencies like the U.S. dollar, euro, yen, and others. The Libra system will also be supported by several traditional financial companies, including PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, and eBay. Facebook set up the Switzerland-based not-for-profit Libra Association to govern the activities of the digital currency. The company says these changes are aimed at improving trust and preventing major valuation changes of the Libra. Investors in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have lost hundreds of millions of dollars because of sharp price drops and computer attacks. Facebook created a separate company called Calibra to operate the Calibra wallet system. The wallet is used to store, send, and receive Libras. Calibra will be available as an app on smartphones or directly from Facebook's Messenger and WhatsApp products. Facebook said it had taken major steps to create a system that is private and secure. People using Calibra will first have to go through a process to confirm their identities. The company says Calibra will only share user information with parent company Facebook and third parties when it receives user permission to do so. User information might also be shared in some other limited cases, such as when law enforcement requests information, Facebook said in a statement. Facebook has promised not to use any Calibra data to improve targeting of its advertising. Businesses will see the same information about users who pay with Libra as they do about users paying with credit cards, the company said. Even with such statements and promises, Facebook is likely to face serious questions about its new cryptocurrency system from lawmakers in the United States and other countries. Some American lawmakers have already proposed that Facebook face new rules or penalties, or possibly even be forcibly broken up, for major incidents involving the misuse of private user data. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. We begin the story of President Lyndon Johnson.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lyndon Baines Johnson became America's 36th president suddenly.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy and Johnson, his vice president, were in Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was shot as his open car drove through the city. Within a few hours, Johnson was sworn into office. The swearing-in took place on the presidential plane, Air Force One, at Dallas's Love Field. The plane returned to Andrews Air Force Base near Washington, carrying the new president and the body of the former president. At Andrews, President Johnson read a brief statement. He ended with these words, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." Before he was vice president, LBJ had served for many years in the Senate and the House of Representatives. He grew up in small towns in Texas. He finished high school at age 15. He traveled and worked for a few years before he entered Southwest Texas State Teachers College. There, he was a student leader and a political activist. In 1931, a newly elected congressman asked Johnson to work for him as his secretary in Washington. 4 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt appointed Johnson as Texas Director of Roosevelt's National Youth Administration. 2 years after that, in 1937, Johnson won a special election for a seat in the House of Representatives. He served in the House for 12 years. When the United States entered World War II, Johnson was the first member of Congress at that time to volunteer for active duty. After the war, he ran for the Senate, where he also served for 12 years. Johnson loved politics and became an expert in the operations of government. He would need all of that knowledge as president of a nation facing problems near and far. When Johnson took office, communist forces were fighting South Vietnamese troops supported by the United States. Also, there were continuing worries about nuclear war with the Soviet Union. At home, there was racial conflict. Many Americans were out of work, and there was the threat of a railroad strike. Johnson began his presidency by working hard for legislation that President Kennedy had proposed. Johnson had voted against civil rights legislation when he served in the Senate, but now he urged Congress to support the idea, and Congress agreed. The 1964 Civil Rights Act barred discrimination against minorities in jobs and in restaurants and other businesses.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights. Yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty. Yet millions are being deprived of those blessings. Not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
The president said that such a situation could not continue in America. To treat people unfairly because of their race, he said, violated the Constitution and the idea of democracy. Lyndon Johnson succeeded in getting Congress to pass more civil rights legislation in 1965 and 68.
Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than the duty we have to ensure that right.
Many southern states used so-called literacy tests as a way to deny blacks the right to vote.
The Negro citizen may go to register only to be told that the day is wrong, or the hour is late, or the official in charge is absent. And if he persists, and if he manages to present himself to the registrar, he may be disqualified because he did not spell out his middle name, or because he abbreviated a word on the application. And if he manages to fill out an application, he is given a test. The registrar is the sole judge of whether he passes this test. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write.
The Civil Rights Act of 1965 said states could not prevent citizens from voting just because they could not read very well. The 1968 law barred discrimination against blacks in housing. Johnson was from the South. That and his ability to persuade people helped him get Southern conservatives in Congress to support the civil rights legislation. He also had other ideas for a better America. He called his plan the Great Society. He talked about it in a speech at the University of Michigan.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents.
Johnson launched the War on Poverty, a series of bills designed to help the poor. But his efforts to pay for social programs and a war overseas led to inflation. Vietnam was not the only place where Johnson used military force. In 1965, he sent more than 20,000 troops to intervene in the Dominican Republic. He worried that a revolution could lead to a communist takeover of that Caribbean nation. Lyndon Johnson served the last 14 months of President Kennedy's term. Then, in 1964, he ran for a full term. The Democratic Party strongly supported him and accepted his choice of Hubert Humphrey for vice president. Humphrey was a liberal senator from the state of Minnesota. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a difficult time choosing their presidential candidate. Delegates at the party's nominating convention finally chose Barry Goldwater. Goldwater was a strongly conservative senator from Arizona.
Certainly, simple honesty is not too much to demand of men in government. And let our republicanism, so focused and so dedicated, not be made fuzzy and futile by unthinking and stupid labels. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The Republican candidate for vice president was William Miller, a congressman from New York State. Americans voted in November of 1964. Lyndon Johnson won more than 60% of the popular vote. Still, he had hoped for an even bigger victory. He wanted proof that Americans were voting for him and not the shadow of John Kennedy. In his inaugural speech, Johnson said his great society would never be finished. It would keep growing and improving.
I do not believe that the great society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again. But always trying and always gaining.
In 1965, he won congressional approval of Medicare, a health insurance program for Americans age 65 and older. President Harry Truman had called for such a plan 20 years earlier. Johnson presented Truman and his wife Bess with Medicare cards numbers 1 and 2. Under Johnson, Congress also approved Medicaid, a health care program for the poor and disabled. In 1967, President Johnson appointed the nation's first black justice to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall. Around the country, President Johnson faced growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. More and more American troops were dying. Lyndon Johnson may have wanted to be remembered as a great president, but the war came to redefine his presidency.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.